Okay, so have you ever had one of those, like, just totally soul-crushing dreams? You know, the kind that wakes you up in a cold sweat and you just can't shake that feeling of dread?
Yeah, like that feeling sticks with you all day.
Totally. Like a shadow hanging over you.
Yeah.
That's kind of the vibe I got right away from this new material you sent over. We're diving into Kane's story, and right off the bat, we're hit with this intense recurring nightmare he has.
Yeah, the excerpts you provided really just throw us right into it. It's graphic, too. He's standing over his twin brother Abel, spear in hand, and Abel is fatally wounded. And to make things even worse each night, the dream gets more vivid. Like, ghostly figures of Abel from past nightmares are there too, and their screams just get louder every time.
It's heavy stuff. I mean, talk about internal turmoil,
For
right?
sure. And it's interesting because there's also this other layer to his dreams. He's got this unique connection to his magic sword.
Rosalind, right?
Exactly, Rosalind. And she's not just like a voice in his head or anything. She's described as this psychic manifestation of the blade itself, almost like a maternal figure guiding him in his lucid dreams.
It's such a cool concept. Like, you don't usually think of a weapon as being nurturing.
I know, right? It's this really interesting juxtaposition. You've got this prophecy hanging over him about killing his brother, and then this sword with a nurturing presence, almost like it's trying to counteract that darkness in a way. And the description of their training is fascinating, too. It's like they're strengthening their bond, which allows Kane to enter these lucid dreamscapes more easily. But even those dreams are unsettling, you know, like cloudy skies, a cold wind, and there's this weird detail about the smell of overripe fruit everywhere.
Ugh, yeah, that would creep me out. So in one of these dream sessions with Rosalind, Kane kind of breaks down. He's clearly been consumed by this nightmare and the prophecy, and he just wants a normal dream for once. He says he wants to have a nice dream, like other people describe, you know, like something mundane or pleasant.
Yeah.
And that's when he brings up wanting to revisit the origins of this whole prophecy thing. Like, how did this fear even begin?
Yeah, going back to the source, right? I mean, it makes sense. He's trying to understand the root of this dread. And Rosalind's response is super interesting. She says, wanting to relive the past in a dream isn't all that unusual, but she emphasizes that Kane has to be the one in control, even though it's her psychic realm. In a way, since she's tied to the sword, he needs to take the reins.
It's like she's saying he can't just be a passive observer in his own mind. He has to be an active participant.
Absolutely. And he manages to shift the dream. It
Right.
goes from this creepy psychic space to his childhood home. And there's this immediate sense of warmth and familiarity, like the smell of breakfast cooking. And then he sees Abel, his younger brother. And you can tell it's a moment of pure joy for Kane. Like, all the guilt and worry just fades away for a second.
That's like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, totally. And then we see these really sweet brotherly interactions. Abel wakes him up and teases him about sleeping in there. They bicker over a shirt. There's a race to brush their teeth, which Abel wins, of course. It's just a snapshot of normal, loving sibling stuff.
And their mom, Karina, she seems like a really lovely presence, very caring and warm. She gently tells Kane not to run on the stairs, and then they all sit down for breakfast. Bacon, eggs, toast, you know, the works. There's even this tiny detail about them having good table manners, which just says something about their upbringing.
Yeah, you can tell they're well loved and cared for. It makes the whole nightmare situation even more tragic in a way.
Definitely. And Karina picks up on Kane being a bit off. He's not his usual self, not as eager to help with the cooking, but he just brushes it off, saying he's tired.
And then she drops the bomb. It's chore day.
Cue the dramatic groans.
Right. But even with the chores, they're excited because they've got plans to build a fort by the creek. And it's that shared anticipation, you know, that excitement for something simple and fun that really highlights their strong family bond. It's something that Kane clearly cherishes and fears losing.
That's like that fear is always lurking beneath the surface. Anyway, they finish their chores and head towards the creek. And the descriptions of the setting are really idyllic. They live in this place called Meadowsboro, and there's this image of dirt roads and wildflowers. Just peaceful and charming. And we learn that another family, the Stranges, live nearby, closer to the university.
And of course, being kids, their walk turns into a race. But they both end up tripping and scraping their hands. And here we see a pretty significant difference between Cain and Abel. Cain's wounds heal almost instantly through magic, but Abel's don't. You can sense Cain's guilt about this. Like, it's not fair that he has this ability and his brother doesn't.
It's like a visual representation of the power he possesses, this
Yeah.
inherent difference between them.
Right. And this instant healing suggests something unique about Cain's magic. Maybe it's some form of regeneration tied to his lineage, who knows? But it sets him apart from Abel in a big way.
Abel even comments on it, like, why don't my boo-boos disappear like yours? And all Cain can say is, I'm sorry. It's like he doesn't even fully understand the implications of this difference.
Yeah. It's just another layer to the whole prophecy situation. So they get to the strange house and meet Wes. He's described as a tiefling, which basically means he's got some kind of demonic or otherworldly heritage. And he's got this red tail and knotted hair, which is pretty cool visually.
I know, right? So they're all talking about building this fort, and Cordelia, Wes's little sister, overhears them and wants to join. And Cain, being a typical little boy, is like, no girls allowed.
Classic.
But their mom, Destiny Strange, who also happens to be Karina's babysitting charge, isn't having it. She's much stricter than Karina and even flicks her tail in annoyance. She makes Wes take Cordelia along and forces Cain to apologize, even though he doesn't really mean it.
You can sense some tension between those two already. And there's this little detail about Cordelia hating Karina's potatoes.
So maybe there's some history there.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, yeah. So now it's three boys and Cordelia heading to the creek. And even though she wanted to come, Cordelia seems to be playing by herself while the boys are gathering materials for the fort. Cain even suggests she go find other girls to play with.
But Cordelia's got a mind of her own. She wants this specific gnarled branch. And when Cain says no, she uses magic to get it.
And whacks him in the head with it.
Yeah, ouch. It's our first real glimpse of magic outside of Cain's healing, and it's pretty aggressive. It definitely establishes Cordelia as a force to be reckoned with.
Agreed. And despite the head bonk, the boys keep building their fort. They've got their roles all figured out. Abel's the planner. Wes adds his decorative flair. Hours pass, the fort takes shape, they have a few collapses, you know, typical kid stuff.
I love that they included those details. It makes it feel so real.
For sure.
Right.
And finally, they're relaxing inside their masterpiece when Wes realizes Cordelia's gone missing. Cain remembers seeing her wander off into the woods earlier, and feeling responsible, he goes to look for her. But as he enters the woods, the atmosphere changes completely. It gets colder, the trees are denser, and that weird smell of overripe fruit gets stronger.
Ugh, yeah, I remember that detail. So creepy.
And Cain recognizes these rowan trees and realizes he's in Witchwood, a place that's nowhere near their home. He calls out for Cordelia one last time and then decides to head back.
But that's when things get really weird. He bumps into Destiny Strange, and she's completely different. Gone is the stern babysitter. Now she's this tall, imposing figure with glowing eyes. Her voice echoes when she speaks. It's like a complete transformation.
I know, right? And it's like she's drawing power from the woods. Remember, it mentions she works late gathering materials for prophecies. So there's definitely something mystical going on there. She calls Cain a child touched by fate, fated and bound to prophecy. And then she conjures this orb of white smoke, and Cain sees a terrifying vision. Two shadowed figures who look like twins, one with a spear, the other bleeding on the ground, and then she utters those chilling words, "You shall kill your brother."
Talk about a bombshell. No wonder he freaks out.
He's paralyzed by fear. It's like his worst nightmare confirmed right there in front of him. He just runs, and he ends up crashing into Abel. But in his panic state, he sees a minor cut on Abel's leg and thinks it's a fatal wound. The prophecy is already messing with his head.
His fear is completely distorting his reality.
Yeah. Abel tries to comfort him, but Cain flinches away. He's terrified of getting too close, like he might somehow trigger the prophecy just by being near him. He stammers out that he saw something scary, relieved it wasn't a monster. And then Abel mentions Cordelia's fine, playing with another girl named Mercy. But despite the relief, the encounter with Destiny and the weight of that prophecy linger.
He can't escape it.
Exactly. But when Abel invites him to see the finished fort, Cain goes. Maybe it's a way to distract himself, to grasp onto some sense of normalcy.
So chapter one ends with Cain carrying this huge secret in fear. And Abel is completely oblivious, still innocent and carefree.
It's a heartbreaking contrast. Chapter two picks up with Cain back in his own bed. We see he's learned to fall asleep pretty easily, even with all the anxiety. But his training with Rosalind continues in his dreams. They're sparring psychically, and Rosalind immediately notices he's distracted.
Like she can see right through him.
Totally. She even brings up an incident from their past where Cain accidentally scarred Abel. It's a physical manifestation of his fear, and it mirrors the prophecy in a way. We also learn that their relationship is strained. Cain's been creating distance between them, trying to protect Abel.
It's so sad. He's pushing away the person he cares about most.
And there's this crazy plan they've cooked up to stage a fight with a coven of witches. Cain's going to let himself get stabbed with his mother's sword as a way to convince them he's not a threat.
That's some next level paranoia.
Seriously. But it also shows a certain level of trust. between Cain and Abel. Like, they must still have some kind of bond for them to even consider such a risky plan. So we then get a flashback to when they were 13. They're living in separate rooms, divided by a wall that their mom put up. It's not just for privacy, it's to protect Abel from Cain. Their morning interactions are minimal, filled with Cain's constant worry. He's basically living in self-imposed isolation.
And then their mom announces a quest for their upcoming birthday. They need to investigate attacks on cattle at a nearby ranch. It could be dire wolves.
And Abel's ecstatic. He sees it as a real adventure, a chance to prove himself.
But Cain is terrified. The thought of spending all that time with Abel, especially with swords involved, is just too much.
His fear is paralyzing. And when Abel asks if they're ready, Cain suggests they split up during the investigation. He tries to make it sound logical, like it's a strategic decision, but it's clear he just can't handle being alone with Abel.
He's trying to outrun fate. So before the quest begins, Cain confides in Wes. He tells him about his fear of hurting Abel. Wes is skeptical, but he's a good friend and listens. Then they go to the Wolf Academy library to do some research. And Cain struggles to read.
Remember he had those learning difficulties when he was younger?
Yeah. It's like that part of him is still there, lurking beneath the surface. And it's interesting because Wes is totally comfortable in the library. He's actively researching while Cain is zoning out, looking at pictures of dragons and scorpions.
But then they meet Professor Atticus. She sees Cain with the Book of Beasts and immediately knows about the quest. She seems to have this deep understanding of things, like she can see right through Cain's facade. She subtly guides him toward the dire wolf entry, encouraging him to think for himself. And Cain does. He remembers stuff from old animal magazines about wolves hunting cows, their instincts, and their territory.
And Atticus acknowledges his reasoning. But then she gives him this really cryptic advice about enjoying the present moment and not fearing the loss of time, even short moments. It's almost like she knows about his internal struggle.
Yeah, it's deep. So after getting kicked out of the library for goofing off, Cain and Wes head back to their fort. And then Abel shows up. He's excited to share his findings, and he wants to ask Cain something important.
But then this guy Garrett shows up. He's a real creep. He harasses the boys and has been known to stalk their mom.
He represents a very different kind of threat. More immediate, more human.
And despite all their issues, the twins instantly team up against him. They're protective of each other and their mom. It shows that their bond is still there, even if it's buried beneath layers of fear.
It's a powerful moment. Garrett eventually backs off, and the boys share a look. Like, they can still rely on each other when it matters, but Abel never gets to ask his question. Whatever it was, it remains unspoken.
I know. What was he going to say?
It's a cliffhanger. So that night at dinner, they tell their mom about the dire wolves, and she confirms it's a real possibility. Cain is still relying on dreamless sleep to cope, but it's not working. He's still exhausted.
The next morning is the same old routine, awkward and distant. They pack for the hunt, and their mom makes Cain help Abel with his bag. It's a small detail, but it shows how much stronger Cain is.
And then they get their gear. Cain's steel short sword is mentioned, which probably doesn't help his anxiety. Their mom announces it's their first adventure, but they're not exactly thrilled.
The weight of everything is just too much.
Yeah, so they set off at dawn and arrive at the ranch. Their mom immediately starts teaching them. She has Abel look for clues, which he finds. Then she guides Cain, asking him about tracking dire wolves. She's clearly an experienced adventurer, and she's using this quest as a learning opportunity for them.
And she tells them stories about her own adventures, like an encounter with a fairy ring and a grizzly bear. She's clearly not messing around.
Totally. Eventually, they reach this rock formation with a spring. It's a likely spot for a dire wolf den. They stop for lunch, and Cain gets assigned sword swings as punishment for not packing his tent properly. And while he's doing the swings, he spots a dire wolf about to attack Abel.
Oh, no.
He shouts a warning, giving Abel just enough time to react. And then Cain instinctively uses his mother's enchanted sword. It releases this burst of stardust, which startles the wolf, but also triggers a rock slide.
Things just escalated quickly.
Yeah, big time. They're suddenly fighting for their lives, scrambling to escape the falling rocks. And in a moment of pure selflessness, Abel pulls Cain out of the path of a huge rock fall, but loses his footing in the process. He ends up hanging from a cliff, desperately clinging to a rock.
Talk about a role reversal.
I know. Cain is terrified. The nightmare, the prophecy, it all comes rushing back. But he pushes through the fear. And with this incredible effort, he pulls Abel up just as the ground beneath them collapses. And then, boom, wings of light.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like his divine power kicks in, saving them both from certain death. It's heroic, it's beautiful, it's totally unexpected.
So what happens next?
Abel is shaken but safe, and he admits that he thought Cain might have let him fall. That's how broken their trust was. But Cain reassures him and apologizes for their walk slide, and Abel forgives him. They check on each other, then they hear their mom calling out. She tells them to stay together, and Abel just lets out this heartfelt, "I love you, Mom." It's like a huge wave of relief.
So much has changed in such a short amount of time.
It's crazy, and their dynamic is completely different now. They've faced death together. Cain saved Abel's life. There's this newfound respect and connection. And Cain, emboldened by what just happened, tells Abel they'll face any future threat together.
That's so hopeful.
So we've seen Cain's deepest fear, his struggle with the prophecy, and his complex relationship with Abel. And we've seen these glimmers of hope. Their bond is stronger. Cain's powers are emerging. It makes you wonder what's next for them.
It's a great setup for the rest of the story. And for me, the most interesting thing was that contrast between Cain's nightmare and his genuine love for Abel. Like, deep down, he cares so much. And then there's the prophecy itself. How will it play out? Can they change their fate?
And what stood out to you?
The wings of light. That was just amazing. And it makes you think, you know, sometimes our greatest fears can lead to the most incredible acts of courage. Like Cain facing his fear to save his brother. It's a powerful message.
It is. And it leaves us with so many questions. Can they overcome the prophecy? Will their bond continue to grow? We'll have to wait and see.
I can't wait to find out. And for our listeners, I think the takeaway here is that even when things seem predetermined, we always have a choice. Our actions, our connections, they can change the course of our lives. Just like Cain saving Abel.
It's a powerful reminder that even in the face of destiny, we have agency.
And that's a really hopeful thought.
It was is. So until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep choosing your own path.
And as always, thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
See you next time.